So, this is Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 1, text 2. Dharmaha,
Dharma,
Prajitaha,
Prajita,
Kaitavo,
Tra,
Paramo,
Paramo,
Nirma, Nirmatsaranam,
Nirmatsaranam,
Satam,
Satam,
Vedyam,
Vedyam,
Vastavam,
Vastavam,
Atra,
Atra,
Vastu,
Vastu,
Shivaram,
Shivaram,
Tapa,
Tapa,
Trayam Mulanam,
Trayam Mulanam,
Srimad Bhagavate,
Srimad Bhagavate,
Maha,
Maha,
Muni,
Muni,
Krite,
Krite,
Tim,
Tim,
Bhata,
Parar,
Parar, Ishwaraha,
Ishwara,
Sadyo,
Sadyo,
Riddhi,
Riddhi,
Avarudyate,
Avarudyate,
Tra,
Tra,
Kritibi,
Kritibi,
Sushrush, Sushrushubish,
Sushrushubish,
Tatshanat,
Tatshanat,
Dharmaha Projita, Kaitavotra, Paramo, Nirmatsaranam Satam,
Dharmaha Projita, Kaitavotra, Paramo, Nirmatsaranam Satam,
Vedyam Matsavamatravastu, Shivanam tapatranam triyam mulanam
Vedyam vastavam atravastu Shivanam tapatranam mulanam
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parar Ishwarah
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parar Ishwarah
Chadyo Vridyavar Yat Rudyate Tra Kritibi Sushrushvish Tatshanat
Chadyo Vridyavar Rudyate
Dharmaha Projita Kaitavo Tram Paramo Nirmas Nirmatsaranam Satam
Dharma Projita Kaitavo Tram Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam
Venyam Vastavamantra Vastu Shivanam Tapa Tram Trayon Mulanam
Vedyam Vastavamantra Vastu Shivanam Tapa Trayon Mulanam
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parir Ishwarah
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parir Ishwarah
Sadyo Vridya Varudyate Tra Kritibi Sushrush Subish Tatshana
Sadyo Vridya Varudyate Tra
Dharmaha Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam
Dharma Projita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmatsaranam
Vedyam Vatsavam Vatra Vastu Srivadam Tapa Trayon Mulanam
Vedyam Vatsavam Vatra Vastu Srivadam Tapa
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parir A Ishwarah
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parir Ishwarah
Sadyo Vridya Varudyate Tra Kritibi Sushrushubish Tatshana
Sadyo Vridya Varudyate Tra Kritibi Sushrushubish Tatshana
Dharma Prachita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam
Dharma Prachita Kaitavotra Paramo Nirmat Saranam Satam
Vedyam Vastavam Atravastu Shivadam Tapatrayam Mulanam
Vedyam Vastavam Atravastu Shivadam Tapatrayam Mulanam
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimva Pare Ishwarah
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimva Pare Ishwarah
Sadyo Hridya Varudyate Tra Kriti Vihi Sushrushubhi Tatshanat
Sadyo Hridya Varudyate Tra Kriti Vihi Sushrushubhi Tatshanat
Dharma Projita Kaitavo Tra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam
Dharma Projita Kaitavo Tra Paramo Nirmatsaranam Satam
Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parayishvara
Srima Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kimba Parayishvara
Sadyo Ridya Varujyate Trakriti Vekshushushubhishtachanat
Sadyo Ridya Varujyate Trakriti Vekshushushubhishtachanat
Dharma Prochita Kaitubo Traparmo Nirmatsaranam Satam
Dharma Prochita Kaitubo Traparmo Nirmatsaranam Satam
Vedyam Vastavam Vakshya Vastu Sivaram Tatvatrayam Vivaram
Vedyam Vastavam Vakshya Vastu Sivaram Tatvatrayam Vivaram
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kendra Parer Isvaraha
Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite Kendra Parer
Sadhyori Abhur Abharuga Dhyatetra Kritabhi Susrush Subhis Patsana
Sadhyori Dhyaruga Tetra Kritabhi Susrush Subhis Patsana
Dharmaha
Dharmaha
Religiosity
Religiosity
Projita
Projita
Completely rejected
Kaitavaha, Kaitavaha,
covered by fruitive intention.
Covered by fruitive intention.
Atra,
Atra,
herein.
Herein.
Paramaha,
Paramaha,
the highest.
The highest.
Nirmatsaranam,
Nirmatsaranam,
of the 100% pure in heart.
Of the 100% pure in heart.
Satam,
Satam,
devotees.
Devotees.
Vedyam,
Vedyam,
understandable.
Understandable.
Vastavam,
Vastavam,
factual,
factual.
Atra,
Atra,
herein,
herein.
Vastu,
Vastu,
substance,
substance.
Shivadam,
Shivadam,
well-being,
well-being.
Tapatraya,
Tapatraya,
threefold miseries,
threefold miseries.
Unmulanam,
Unmulanam,
causing, uprooting, causing uprooting of. Srimat,
Srimat,
beautiful.
Beautiful.
Bhagavate,
Bhagavate,
the Bhagavat Puran.
The Bhagavat Puran.
Mahamuni,
Mahamuni,
the great sage.
The great sage.
Vyasadeva,
Vyasadeva,
Krite,
Krite,
having completed.
Having completed.
Kim,
Kim,
what?
What?
What is?
What is?
Va,
Va,
the need.
Hare, Hare,
others,
others.
Ishwaraha,
Ishwaraha,
the Supreme Lord,
the Supreme Lord.
Sadyaha,
Sadyaha,
at once,
at once.
Rudhi,
Rudhi,
within the heart,
within the heart.
Avarudyate,
Avarudyate,
become compact,
become compact.
Atra,
Atra,
herein,
herein.
Kriti be,
Kriti be,
by the pious men,
by the pious men.
Sushrushu, Sushrushubhi,
Sushrushubhi,
by culture,
by culture.
Tachanat,
Tachanat,
without delay,
without delay.
Translation: completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Puran propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge of the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart. So I say, and you can repeat, completely rejecting all religious activities.
Completely rejecting all religious activities.
Which are materially motivated.
Which are materially motivated.
This Bhagavat Puran.
This Bhagavat Puran.
Propounds the highest truth.
Propounds the highest truth.
Which is understandable.
Which is understandable.
By those devotees.
By those devotees.
Who are fully pure in heart.
Who are fully pure in heart.
The highest truth is reality.
The highest truth is reality.
Distinguished from illusion.
Distinguished from illusion.
For the welfare of all.
For the welfare of all.
Such truth.
Such truth
uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam. Compiled by the great sage Vyasadeva. In his maturity. Is sufficient in itself. For God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively. And submissively. Hears the message of Bhagavatam. By this culture. Of knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Is established within his heart. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Religion includes four primary subjects, namely pious activities, economic development, satisfaction of the senses, and finally liberation from material bondage. Irreligious life is a barbarous condition. Indeed, human life begins when religion begins. Eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating are the four principles of animal life. These are common both to animals and to human beings, but religion is the extra function of the human being. Without religion, human life is no better than animal life. Therefore, in human societies, there is some form of religion which aims at self-realization and which makes reference to man's eternal relationship with God. In the lower stages of human civilization, there is always competition to lord it over the material nature, or, in other words, there is continuous rivalry to satisfy the senses. Driven by such consciousness, man turns to religion. He thus performs pious activities or religious functions in order to gain something material. But if such material gains are obtainable, in other words, then so-called religion is neglected. This is the situation in modern civilization. Man is striving economically, so at present he is not very interested in religion. Man is thriving economically, so at present he is not so much interested in religion. Churches, mosques, and temples are now practically vacant. Men are more interested in factories, shops, and cinemas than in religious places which were erected by their forefathers. This practically proves that religion is performed for some economic gains. Economic gains are needed for sense gratification. Often one is baffled in the pursuit of sense gratification. He takes to salvation and tries to become one with the Supreme Lord. Consequently, all these states are simply different types of sense gratifications. So you can see in Prabhupada, I'm going to pause just for a moment, Srila Prabhupada in his usual form is preaching in the Singha, you know, in lion stage. He's hitting them right between the eyes. You and I both know you go to church because you want something. You want sense gratification. When you can't get it, you turn to God. When you get enough of it, then you don't turn to God. You don't need Him anymore. That's what he's saying here. He's saying. So, we can see like this. We can see so many churches that are full of people. And it's like they come in and they stick their hand up. Give me. Oh, Lord, give me this. At the end, they'll have some little praying. I've been to some. They'll have a little praying thing. Sometimes they break down into groups and they're praying. What are they praying? We have several groups of people throughout the church and they're praying. Save my cousin. I remember my sister took me to her church one time. And then at the end, there were prayer requests. You know, so this one lady, here we are. We were in Chicago. My family, they're riding back from Tennessee. You know, so could you ask for them to be protected? So they're all praying. Oh Lord,
This is the request. This is word for word. Oh Lord, please ride in the car. Ride in that car and save them. Steer that wheel, God.
So in other words, now who wants to ride for 9 or 10 hours in a car? I mean, you know, it's a treat to come here to see you, because I'm thinking every bit of the way, this is very nice. It's only 5 hours from El Paso, and it's broken up. Of course, it's 10 or 11 hours to get to El Paso. But who would ask somebody? I know this drive from Dallas to El Paso just tuckers me out. Now, why would I ask my dear Lord that I love to ride in that car? Not only that, but I want you to steer the wheel. I want you to drive. So we can safely take a nap in the back seat. You know, this is my do-all God here. You know, while you're at it, before we start, why don't you check the air in the tires? You know. So this is the nature we can see. This is the nature of religion. In India, we see. It's full, isn't it? It's full of it. I want, give me. They go to the temple and they're giving something and they're expecting something in return. You know, some of the temples, and even in India, but especially in America, you see the Hindu centers here, and they have everybody. There's Radha and Krishna and all the demigods. You know? Yeah. We don't want to miss anybody. You know? Isn't it?
Yeah. And also there is a same kind of, you know, there is one story, you know, like you said, because there is one old woman, she was carrying a load on her head, and she was trying, and she said, "Oh my Lord, please help me." And then Lord came, you know, or Krishna came. So what do you want? Well, can you leave this way? When the Lord came, even she wants, you know, to carry those kind of, you know, heavy thing. So that is kind of, the people are really...
Yeah. Now, when we talk like this, some people look at us like this, like, "Well, and what's your point?" You know? Well, yeah, okay, I'm asking God for a minute. Are you trying to make a point here? I mean, where are you going with this? Doesn't everybody? Isn't that what he's for? You see? And then sometimes they'll deny it. Oh, no. We're cultivating love of God as well. And look you right in the eye. Oh, yeah. You know. By the way, my dear Lord, could you cut the grass on your way in for washing the car? You know. I mean, why not? You see. Give us this day. Give me daily bread. What does Prabhupada say about that? Daily bread is there, Prabhupada says. Why are you asking for daily bread? The squirrel gets his daily bread. All living entities, even the bugs, the insects, they're taken care of. Why do we think that God won't take care of us? You see? Give me. As soon as we see him, the hand goes out. As we start talking about him, you know. So, that's what Prabhupada is saying. He's punching him right between the eyes with this. Yes?
I'm a little confused by that. That's been something that's come up a few times. If Jesus was a pure devotee and he taught us to pray that way, then why did he do that?
Well, it's like Prabhupada was saying in the purport here. How does he put it? He puts it in a nice way that without religion, human life is just barbarous. You got to remember, who was he talking to? Who was the Lord Jesus Christ talking to? It was not a scene like this. Okay? You did not have this caliber of human being. You see? I mean, these people killed him. They killed him. Now, why did they kill him? I mean, look what the element he was dealing with. He was just saying, "My God, be civilized." He wasn't preaching love of Godhead. He wasn't preaching out of Bhagavatam. Boy, could he not go there. He was saying, "Hey, get civilized. Ask God, okay? Ask God. Get in the habit of at least that. But that's the beginning. That's the first thing. You start asking God. And then you build a relationship with God. He was trying to get them to take the baby step. Ask God for your sense gratification.
And for us, and you said, it's a great, like you said at the beginning, it's a great blessing for us to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a great grace. I mean, it's just strictly mercy that we're even here. For the general public, when we're preaching, I mean, the crowd today is probably worse than the crowd that Jesus was preaching to as far as greed and violence and, you know. What is our message? Do we go directly to this, or do we start with teaching them to pray to God too?
We start directly with this, just like Prabhupada did. Prabhupada came amongst a bunch of fuzzy hippies. You know?
Yeah. Really?
And what did he do? He hit us right between the eyes with it. Yes, Prabhupada?
Well, it's just, in my limited way of thinking, is what they're doing there, the Christians are doing there, is it's an acknowledgement that everything comes from God. That maybe there could be a correction or fine-tuning in how to do it.
Yeah.
But it's an acknowledgement that it's not by my efforts, it's by God's mercy that you're getting these things. And so by praying, you're saying, well, this is where it's coming from. So I don't see why that's quite so bad.
Well, I mean, it's not bad, necessarily. But in other words, Prabhupada's point here is that, all right, when times are tough, here we are. Oh, God, save me. So, but then when things are thriving, you know, someone say, well, you haven't been to church in a long time. Oh, well, I've been really busy. You know, the business is really going well. And I've got my golf game down to a 3 handicap now. Little Johnny's got soccer. And, you know, you see, so that's the point. So where we're going with this, we're talking about this is graduate level PhD stuff here. If we compare this to the hey gimme gimme gimme, we're without picking on them, because at least they're going to church. But basically, the Christians and Muslims and most of them, this is like kindergarten religion. Okay, first day. Now ask God for this stuff. So instead of just being a barbarian, stop being barbarous. Start asking God for your stuff. Okay? That's like, you know, can you do that? If you can do that, okay. Now sooner or later we'll move you up a level or two. We'll take a step to where you can approach love of Godhead. Yes?
It's probably actually, I remember what when you're saying that. Things. So there is one Prabhupada, Sam Kunda Prabhupada, and he was giving Bhagavatam class, and then he was explaining that how other religions in our being practice, that is the level of their increasing. And he said that I grew up in a Christian family, I love Jesus, but I found that where the Christianity ends, from that Krishna consciousness begins.
Yeah. Exactly.
Actually,
Wonderful stepping stone. It brings some because of the body feature of Jesus Christ, they're identifying with a person. You know, it's not an energy. There's a person. So since there's a person, although the image of Christ is imaginary, they don't know what he looked like, but they've come up with this really attractive. But, you know, he's getting red hair and blue eyes. And we know he didn't look like that. Nobody else in that. You go to that part of the world, they don't look like that. You know, you're never going to see anybody. But they've got, so they've got this image. And it says in the Bible, you know, graven images. Don't worship anybody. But this is a graven image. They've concocted it. You see? So, it's a great. So, bless their hearts. Yes, Mother.
We understand that in the Christian religion that you know they have the one rasa, generally the relationship of father.
Yeah.
And if anyone's been around kids at all, It's with kids, it's a one-way street. You know, give me this, give me that. It's, there's no question of, you know, a little kid coming and saying, how can I serve you, Daddy?
Yeah.
You know, it's always, you know, I need Daddy candy, I need food, I need
give
this,
me,
I need
give
that.
Me.
Give me, particularly sense gratification. So, you know, that's the model, actually, this God the Father. And so, naturally, what do we do with our Father, especially when we're young? We just ask him for things.
Stick the hand up. So it's a step from taking people to, it's a civilized step. It's in other words, today you're barbarous, but we're going to help you become a little bit civilized. You see, it's a good baby step. You see, but it's like if you go into if you consider the assembled devotees. You know, this scene right here, this is kindergarten. You know, Sukadeva Goswami, what he's doing here, this isn't kindergarten. This is elevated philosophy, God philosophy. Yes, Mother?
Sorry. Just one comment on the other side. Of course, we're talking about great advanced devotees and amazing philosophy that unfortunately, many devotees don't follow. And I was at an esteemed assembly when one of the leaders said, we'd be good if we could all follow the Ten Commandments. So unfortunately, you know, sometimes devotees fall short. And the shorter they fall, the more they criticize, you know, other religions that they're different symptoms from the religions.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, we also have to walk our talk. We also have to become,
yeah,
you know, saintly people that are above.
We've got this opportunity, you know. We've got the opportunity to learn this. Now, if through studying this, all we can do is become civilized and start to ask Krishna for everything, then there's been some effect, you see. But that's not what it's designed for.
One time, Anuttama said, he asked the devotees that we were at GBC meeting, he said, if you lost your wallet, would you rather lose it at a Mormon convention or a Hare Krishna festival? A Mormon convention. Because I know they get it back 100%. The devotees, you know, it's not, look what Krishna arranged for me. Look, a wallet. Wow, this
look
is really
good. But I'm feeling pious today. I'm going to give the wallet back, but I'm going to keep the money for my preaching. Awesome. This was Krishna's arrangement. Yes.
It'd be very inappropriate to take someone out of pre-algebra and put them in trigonometry because they obviously don't have that foundation. And so what I'm sensing is, which I really like how you preach, because you're very agreeable in a very non-condescending way. You're actually, when you talk with people, you agree with them about attribute of God, like, as you do. So what I'm taking from this is, as Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, do not disturb those who are not seeking me. But more importantly, when we encounter people who are of a religious fundamental nature, be accommodating. Is that,
yeah,
just understand that level is where they're at.
Yeah.
It's perfectly fine as it is.
Well, it's not condescending if you realize where they are, you see. It's just like if you have a crippled person, and then you're in a busy city, and you help them across the street because they don't. Otherwise, they couldn't get across in time before the light would turn. You know, sometimes in many cities the streets are really wide. You know, so then you help this crippled person to get across the street. Are you being condescending? You're being compassionate. No, I mean, you could say, hey, look at you, you're crippled, you know. I could run across the street back and forth three times before you could get halfway. I mean, you could be, but if you say, oh, my dear saint, may I help you? You see, that's not being condescending. You see, so we add the element of love and compassion. So are we thinking, well, hey, I know a lot more about it. No, we're not thinking like that. We're thinking that Krishna is sending you a wake-up call. Krishna is, out of his causeless mercy, in this golden age of Lord Chaitanya, everyone is being offered this opportunity for Krishna prema. This is really rare. We're spoiled babies. We're thinking, oh, this is just typical. You know, we got Srimad Bhagavatam. You realize how rare it is for somebody to come in contact with Srimad Bhagavatam? Not just now, but in previous ages, other planets. You see? We're riding on the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in this golden age. Yes, did you have something?
On this point of love and compassion, like when the Christian missions were like converting so many indigenous people, they were thinking they were doing it out of love and compassion, and really they were kind of forcing people to take it.
Yeah.
So how do we make sure we're not in that mood of take my love and compassion? Take it.
You're not going to tell me I don't love you. Well, we have to be the conduit, you see. In other words, Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is reaching his hand out. He's offering. So we have to be just conduit, you see. We take the love and the mercy that's coming down from through the disciplic succession, and we distribute it, you see. We don't have anything in it. We don't have it. Our part is just to distribute, you see. We're not authorized to change anything, to redo it. But for this window of opportunity, which 10,000 years may seem like a long time, but really in the scope of eternity, it's not even half a heartbeat, you know. So for this brief window of opportunity for 10,000 years, you can have, I sound like a commercial. You can have love of Godhead. Call the toll-free number on your screen now.
Where the clock runs out.
But wait, if you call now, you see what I mean? So this is a very unusual, situation. We're not qualified to understand. But yet, Krishna is giving some special ability for us to understand, to drink this. What qualification do we have? Speaking for myself, I know zero, nothing. You know, basically, I couldn't even be a good Christian. I only went to Christian to church because of for social reasons. You know? The prettiest girl in school was the daughter of the minister, and she invited me to church, and I thought, oh, sure, I'll go to church if I can associate with you. And I mean, being honest with you, that's what it was all about for me, you know. I mean, I was a little afraid of God, and, you know, maybe if I don't do it, what will happen, you know. Basically, it was because I wanted to be with her. So,
Did that ever happen?
Huh?
Did that ever happen?
What's that?
Did you date her?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Krishna provides.
Yeah, yeah, Krishna was providing. So it's just, are we qualified? No. Just to answer your question you asked earlier, should we give them the baby steps? You know, should we just teach them like a watered-down version? No. There's a window of opportunity here for people to grasp this. You know, even we're speaking to barbarous people, they can grasp it through your potency. Now, where are you getting the potency? It's coming through the disciplic succession. You see, right now it's available. You are deputized. All of you are deputized to do it, to spread this. You can do it. Because it's not you. You may think, oh, no, I can't. I don't have the ability. Of course you don't. You don't have the ability. But Krishna will work through you. He will speak through you. He will do through you. You have the ability, and you're deputized to touch people, to let Krishna touch people through you. He will work through you, you see. And you may even get a little puffed up thinking, oh, just see what I'm doing. I'm touching so many people. But, you know, you have to kind of say, what are you fooled? You're not doing anything. You know, this is touching. I'm presenting this, and it's touching. It's changing lives, you see. So, but the window is open right now. People can understand. They can grasp. So, let's not let, as they say, let grass grow under our feet. We've got to make this happen. We can do it. Now, the window's going to close. 9,500 years from now, this window will close. And it ain't going to be like this. If there are any Srimad Bhagavatams around, very few people, and except what devotees are left, are going to be able to understand. It's Kali Yuga will swallow everything like a python swallows its prey.
Yes. Even deities and temples will disappear?
Eventually, yeah.
I read Prabhupada describing that there won't be any more chanting Hare Krishna.
No, it'll go away. Towards the end of Kali Yuga, mankind will be reduced to ape-like entities living in caves. What does that sound like?
Cavemen.
We will digress to cavemen. Now, they found remnants of cavemen from previous yugas, and they speculate that that's where we came from. Well, we used to be cavemen. You know, and through economic development, now we don't live in caves anymore. You know, they're so foolish. They don't realize that in the beginning we're saintly. In Satyuga, everything is very saintly, pure, and then things digress. So they've got a lot of the facts, they just have it backwards. Instead of us coming from ape-like men to where we are now, we are heading towards ape-like men living in caves. We'll be writing on the walls in the caves, and you know. So it's just reversed. They don't know. They think they do, but unfortunately, they just don't. So this right now, for the next 9,500 years, we can do this. We can distribute this. It's going to happen. Krishna's plan will happen. He's just really what Krishna wants is he wants to know, can I give you the credit for doing this? How about you? Can I give you, I'm going to do it. But I want your name to be on some statue or in some book that you did this. I want to glorify you. I love you. I'm Krishna. I'm the most famous. I don't need any more fame. But I want you to have this. I want you. I'm offering it to you. If you accept, you can take the credit, some of the credit, for saving mankind. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it with or without you. Somebody will come forward, and their name will be registered as doing this. It's going to be me. But I want my devotee to get this glory. He wants to glorify his devotee. You see. And the devotee's thinking, oh my Lord, I don't want any glory. It's you all the way. And he's going, no. He's, you see. So, all right, let me continue here. Sorry to get sidetracked, but it's, you know, some of these verses and purports really could be a week class, you know, they could last for a week. I feel like we're not doing it justice by trying to do it in one class, but we'll see what we can do. If we need another one, we'll do another one. Where are we going? We're in the first canto. You know, what's our hurry? You know, so. All right. In the Vedas, the above mentioned four activities are prescribed in the regulative way, so that there will not be any undue competition for sense gratification. But Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to all those gratificatory activities. It is purely transcendental literature with which can be understood only by pure devotees of the Lord who are transcendental to competitive sense gratification. Now he's saying this can only be understood by pure devotees. But yet, we're allowed to understand it. Because it's we're here now.
But basically, you've got to be a pure devotee to understand this. Just good timing on our part. In the material world, there is keen competition between animal and animal, man and man, community and community, nation and nation. But the devotees of the Lord rise above such competitions. They do not compete with the materialist because they are on the path back to Godhead, where life is eternal and blissful. Such transcendentalists are non-envious and pure in heart. In the material world, everyone is envious of everyone else, and therefore there is competition. But in the transcendental, devotees of the Lord are not only free from material envy, but are all well-wishers to everyone, and they strive to establish a competitionless society with God in the center. The contemporary socialist conception of a competitionless society is artificial because in the social state there is competition for the post of dictator. From the point of view of the Vedas, or from the point of view of common human activities, sense gratification is the basis of material life. There are three paths mentioned in the Vedas. One involves fruitive activities to gain promotion to better planets. Another involves worshiping different demigods for promotion to the planets of the demigods. And another involves realizing the absolute truth and his impersonal feature and becoming one with him. The impersonalist aspect of the absolute truth is not the highest. Above the impersonal feature is the Paramatma feature, and above this is the personal feature of the absolute truth, or Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam gives information about the absolute truth in his personal feature. It is higher than impersonalist literatures and higher than the Gyanakanda division of the Vedas. It is even higher than the Karmakanda division and even higher than the Upasana Kanda division. Because it recommends the worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. In the Karmakanda, there is competition to reach heavenly planets for better sense gratification. And there is similar competition in the Gyanakanda and the Upasanakanda. The Srimad Bhagavatam is superior to all of these because it aims at the supreme truth, which is the substance or the root of all categories. From Srimad Bhagavatam, one can come to know the substance as well as the category. The substance is the absolute truth, the Supreme Lord, and emanations are relative forms, and all emanations are relative forms of energy. In other words, what we're teaching is we're trying to help people get unentangled from the energy of Krishna. See, the energy of Krishna will give me my daily bread. The energy of Krishna will help my son be a great soccer player. And I'm looking for, but we're going to the personality of Krishna. You see, instead of using you and your energy to work for me, I'm going to you to have a personal relationship. You see, not to engage you as my servant, my maidservant, or a doer for me. I'm gonna see you as someone that I care for. You see, in other words, we're gonna treat God. We're gonna start in this philosophy. We're gonna teach people to start treating God as nicely as they do their friends. You know, I mean, you may go to your friends once in a while with your hand out, but if you do that all the time, you're not going to be their friend any longer. You know, if every time you see them, say, "Hey, bud, how you doing? Hey, you got $50? You know, could you drive us to? You know, we're going to Dallas. Could you drive us? We're going to take a nap in the back. You know, would you mind? If you're doing this all the time, they're going to
they're going to see you coming, they're going to steer clear of you. Think, oh, God, here he comes. What's he going to want this time? Oh, Lord. You see. So in other words, we're going to teach people to start treating God as well as you would your good, close friends that you care for. You see. You wouldn't. You'll behave properly with someone that you care for. You see. You're not going to start asking them, hey, how you doing? Yeah. Are you off this weekend? You know, my car's really dirty. See? We're going to start at least relating to him in some sort of a loving fashion with some respect. You know? So, nothing is apart from the substance, but at the same time, the energies are different from the substance. The conception is not this conception is not contradictory. Srimad Bhagavatam explicitly promulgates this spontaneously one and different philosophy of the Vedanta Sutra, which begins with the Janmadyasya Sutra, which we studied yesterday. This knowledge that the energy of the Lord is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord is an answer to the mental speculator's attempt to establish the energy as the absolute. When this knowledge is factually understood, one sees the conceptions of monism and dualism to be imperfect. Development of this transcendental consciousness grounded in the conception of simultaneously one and different leads one immediately to the stage of freedom from threefold miseries. The threefold miseries are, one, those miseries which arise from the mind and body, two, those miseries inflicted by other living beings, and three, those miseries arising from natural catastrophes over which one has no control. Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the surrender of the devotee unto the absolute person. The devotee is fully aware that he is one with the absolute person. And at the same time in the eternal position of servant to the Absolute. In the material conception, one falsely thinks himself the Lord of all he surveys, and therefore he is always troubled by the threefold miseries of life. But as soon as one comes to know this his real position as transcendental servant, he at once becomes free from all miseries. As long as the living entity is trying to master the material nature, there is no possibility of his becoming servant of the Supreme. Service to the Lord is rendered in pure consciousness of one's spiritual identity. By service, one is immediately freed from material encumbrances. See? So we have to... the material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So in the material world, it's natural, because we're opposite from the spiritual. It's natural for us to try to get God to serve us. Everything else here is upside down and backwards. So it's natural. You know, gee whiz, here I am, I've got all these problems. Hey God, you busy? You know, I could sure use a hand here. In the spiritual world, there is nothing like that. We are servants of God. You see, we wouldn't think of trying to engage him in our service. It's unthinkable, you see. Although he wants to serve you, we wouldn't think of trying to engage him, you see. So what we're trying to do is to teach. But ISKCON is like training wheels for liberation. It's like training wheels for going back to Godhead. We're going to teach you what it's going to be like when you're liberated into Goloka Vrindavan. You can actually taste it now. So here's what you're going to be doing. So this is training. This is a training thing. So how can you go in there cold? You know, if you show up, if you're liberated, you go to Goloka Vrindavan, the first thing you do is start asking, hey, gimme, gimme, gimme. You know, where's my mansion? I remember when I used to go to church, there was this song that we sang, there'll be a mansion waiting there. That was the conception, is when I go to heaven, I'm going to have a mansion. You know, it's this big mansion, isn't it? Oh man, it's going to be great. I'm going to have a bank account. It's going to be full. Probably servants, you know. A whole bunch of little gods out there cutting my grass and keeping my mansion up. Because, you know, mansions take a lot of upkeep. So, you know, God will expand himself into these little servants and they'll be doing. And of course, I'm just going to be playing golf. Or other things that I like. And maybe once in a while I'll see the big guy. You know, maybe he'll go by in his chariot and I'll be going, "Hey God, how are you doing? You know, hey, thanks for the mansion. You know, roof's leaking though. Can you send somebody over?" You see, they're not thinking I'm going to go and embrace him and I'm going to spend all my time. They're not going to think that when I get there, I'm going to go wrap my arms around God's neck and boy, I'm not going to let go. I'm going to my mansion. Why would you have the concept of you having a mansion if you are going to go and associate with God? If he's so attractive, it's not like you're going to go see him every other Tuesday. You know?
Well, our needs are more important than God, though.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, my desires. I mean, after all, I've been a good Christian or I've been a good Muslim. I deserve, what is it, the 72 virgins? 72 virgins and a mansion. And I've been a good Catholic or a good Jew or whatever. You know, so I've got this really sweet destiny waiting for me. It's a big prize, boy. It's going to be wonderful. And it's going to be worth all this austerity of holding back doing all the things that I'd really rather be doing than being in church. Help me with this, you know. So, but we want to go. When we go to Goloka Vrindavan, we don't care if we have any place to live. You know, we're going to go, we're going to walk into Krishna's palace, and we're not going to leave until they throw us out. You know, security's going to come and say, you know, "Excuse me, sir, we're closing up here. You're going to have to leave." "Well, how about if I just sleep outside and come back? What time does Krishna get up?" "You know, I'll be right back. I'll be right outside if he needs anything. You know, can you, you know, all right, you know, you can sleep out there under that kalpavriksha tree. You know, if Krishna wants anything, he'll let you know." "Oh, thank you." You know, we're not going to leave.
So is it fair to assume that like most religions in their elementary, you know, getting people in the kindergarten, out of kindergarten phase, because some are in the texts are so violent, so horribly violent, that maybe Krishna has no say in these kindergartens? Because, you know, why would he contradict himself in the Bhagavad Gita, which obviously Krishna does not, to say abandon all varieties of religion? So, I mean, is that, would that be fair to say that, you know, in these texts that are very violent, I know time, place, and circumstance, you know, this is what goes on in the culture, but I just can't wrap my brain around Krishna endorsing these things, along with the other...
Oh, they're not endorsed.
Right.
I mean, but it's just kind of like... it's like they're coming out of being barbarians, you see. They're coming out of a barbarous state, as Prabhupada says here. You know, so out of his mercy... Now, he doesn't like it that they have some violent religion that they use basically for their sense gratification. They're not, you know, because they think they have a destination. I'm being a good Muslim because I have a good destination, you know. So I'm doing this, and I'll kill you to make you a Muslim too, because I think that'll please Allah. And if I please Allah, I'll have a bigger mansion, or maybe I'll get 80 virgins instead of 72. You see what I mean? There's something in it for me.
When God speaks in the Bible, and God said to Moses, "God," is that really Krishna?
Yes. Yeah.
It's not some concoction, that story?
No, we have no reason to believe that it's concocted, although some parts of it probably are taken... out of context, or in translation it's been lost. You know, Emperor Constantine in the Council of Nicaea, I mean, they ripped the Bible apart. There's many Bibles. I know Christians who know. There are chapters of the Bible that they left out. And they found them. But they don't use them. A Roman emperor decided, all right, you know, look, I like this one here, and I like this one here's got to go, though. So they picked through, and they changed it. So the unfortunate thing is we have people today that are worshiping something that was butchered by a Roman. And the Romans, they were not very religious people. They don't really care, you know. They were using, you know, Emperor Constantine was so genius that he realized that Rome had occupied so much of the world at that time that their armies were spread very thin in occupying all these different places. So in other words, he knew that in any minute, one of these countries could figure out, hey, wait a minute, you got a bunch of Roman soldiers here, but we could all get sticks and stones and overthrow you. There's only a few of you guys here. We could overthrow you. And if that happened, then another country would say, hey, they kicked the Romans out. We're going to do it too. So he made the famous statement, Rome can no longer rule by might alone. Genius. In other words, my might, my soldiers cannot rule. We've bitten off more than we can chew. We've conquered more world than we have of us. This little place called Rome was occupying even up in Europe, you know. So everybody's thinking, we've got to have something other than soldiers. And it's, religion. That'll do it. We'll use religion. Yes?
It's probably as he asked, someone asked that Krishna said that give up all the religion and surrender. Actually, Krishna, before that, he explained everything that I'm the mother, I'm the father, I'm the destination. Everything emanates from me. I give the knowledge to the person who wants to know. And actually, it is me that all the demigods or any other sages, they get the knowledge and they distribute everything. It is coming from me.
Yeah.
Actually, I provide them. Actually, I mean either Moses or this and that, everybody, if you see Bhagavad Gita knowledge, actually it is all coming from Krishna. Actually, Krishna gives that knowledge. So directly or indirectly, it is all Krishna. And everything Krishna explains that it is all from me. So that is Krishna said that, you know, give up all this other religion and surrender unto me.
Right.
Because I am the source of everything. I am the mother, I am the father, I am the destination, I am the witness and everything. Then why it is not that you surrender unto me?
But by the time he did that, this was in the 18th chapter.
Yeah, exactly.
He had set it all up and explained everything. And now,
Moses, all the this and that people. But actually, it is all from me. Source is, I am the source.
And now, in the we get into the second verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's saying, completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated. You see? So Krishna's taking off where he left off in Bhagavad Gita. You know? This Bhagavatam Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. You see? So he's, in this very verse, he's saying that. Give it up. You see? So in other words, after you've read Bhagavad Gita and have that understanding and come to the realization, now let's kick into the second gear. Let's go into high gear. We're gonna talk about now what you should do. Did you have a question?
I was just gonna ask, what would you answer to Christians who believe the Bible as it is today is, you know, God's divine work, and that he allowed for these books to be missing from the final edition of the Bible?
First of all, I'm not going to get in an argument with them about it. I'm not going to tell them. We can talk about it, but I would never put them in distress by telling them something like that. If they're going to church, all right. If they're not barbarians, and they're going to church, and through that they're getting something, they're still killing animals. you know, the wholesale slaughter of animals is still, but they're at least asking God, they're acknowledging there's a God, and they're asking God for their sense gratification. So, and their sustenance, they're asking for him, and they're asking him to do all these other things. So at least there's thinking about him, you see. So I'm going to offer you Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. If you don't accept it, I'm glad you have what you have. I'm just offering you. It's just like if you have an iPhone 1 and you're perfectly satisfied with it, I show you my iPhone 5 and offer to sell it to you. You say, no, no, the 1 works for me. Okay, all right. Really good. Why should I argue? Well, you fool, my iPhone 5 is much better than your iPhone 1. Oh, wow. See, I got an iPhone 5. You like this? Or it does this, and it's so much better in so many different ways. No, no, I don't like that. I don't want it. I like my iPhone 1. Okay.
Yes. This is a little off topic, but you brought up like Muslim faith. And I've never read, but I heard you read the Quran in Arabic. It has beautiful descriptions of God. It's incredible. I don't know much about their faith. I don't know
enough. I have a book that I got in India that I was going to read that compares Islam and Vaishnavism, but I haven't read it yet. So I've heard it, different people have said different things about it. Some people have said, oh, it's a religion of hate, and then I've heard others say it's a religion of peace, and I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not saying it replaces Bhagavad
Gita. Yeah. Did you have a question?
Well, on this point of violence, there's violence in Bhagavad Gita. It's in the biggest battlefield ever. There's violence in the Bhagavatam. The entire Yadu dynasty is destroyed.
Yeah.
But it's whether this violence is sanctioned by religious principle, by Krishna's plan. It's not Krishna's plan to have religions fighting one another
right.
and killing each other just because you're not a Christian and you're not a Muslim. That's
right.
That's bodily identification. It's sense gratification, basically, to kill someone because they're not your religion.
Yeah.
But according to Krishna's plan, the battle of Kurukshetra took place, so Kaliyuga could go on with his plan.
Yeah.
So it's violence has its place, and that's, you know, that's the whole point of Bhagavad
Gita. And you notice Krishna wasn't asking Arjuna to establish Krishna consciousness or Vaishnavism. He just wanted the forces of evil to not... He wanted Kali Yuga to take its beginning without the forces of evil in power. He wanted at least let the forces of goodness, righteous rulers, be in power at the beginning of this Yuga. It's going to go to hell in a handbasket. But I want to slow it up a little bit. You know, it wasn't like, you know, the soldiers didn't go around and say, "Generate Krishna, I'll lop your head off." It wasn't anything like that. You know, the Romans did that. You Christian, you convert to Christian. If you're not, your head's going off. And some people said, never. So it was said, it was spread by Constantine and the Roman army. You're going to do this or you're going to die. And we already wiped out the village next to you. Their heads are on stakes. You're going to be like them unless you become Christian right now. Well, that's history. That's not us making that up. That's history. That was done. Okay. So I'm going to see if I can. I think we're almost finished. We've got time. Want to take time to do this? A couple more paragraphs? If you've got to go, then that, I understand. But let's see if we can finish this one up. I hate to take till 9:30, but... over and above this, Srimad Bhagavatam is a personal commentation on the Vedanta Sutra by Sri Vyasadeva. It is written in the maturity of his spiritual life through the mercy of Narada. Sri Vyasadeva is the authorized incarnation of Narayan, the personality of Godhead. Therefore, there is no question to his authority. He is the author of all other Vedic literatures, yet he recommends the study of Srimad Bhagavatam above all others. In all other Puranas, there are different methods set forth by which one can worship the demigods. But in the Bhagavatam, only the worship of the, only the Supreme Lord is mentioned. The Supreme Lord is the total body, and the demigods are the different parts of that body. Consequently, by worshiping the Supreme Lord, one does not need to worship the demigods. The Supreme Lord becomes fixed in the heart of the devotee immediately. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended the Srimad Bhagavatam as the spotless Purana, and this distinguishes it from all other Puranas. The proper method for receiving this transcendental message is to hear it submissively. A challenging attitude cannot help one realize this transcendental message. One particular word is used herein for proper guidance. This word is susrushu. Susrushu. One must be anxious to hear this transcendental message. The desire to sincerely hear is the first qualification. In other words, you're not qualified to hear it. But if you want to, if you're anxious to understand it, Krishna will give you the ability to understand it. But if you're challenging, it'll just be like trying to learn Chinese. Or something like that, you know. I don't want to pick on the Chinese. Less fortunate persons are not at all interested in hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. This process is simple, but the application is difficult. Unfortunate people find enough time to hear idle social and political conversations, but when invited to attend a meeting of devotees to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, they suddenly become reluctant. Sometimes professional readers of the Bhagavatam immediately plunge into confidential topics of the pastimes of the Supreme Lord, which they seemingly interpret as sex literature. Srimad Bhagavatam is meant to be heard from the beginning. Those who are fit to assimilate this work are mentioned in this shloka. One becomes qualified to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam after many pious deeds. The intelligent person with thoughtful discretion can be assured by this great sage Vyasadeva that he can realize the Supreme Personality directly by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam without undergoing the different stages of realization set forth in the Vedas. One can be lifted immediately to the position of Paramahamsa simply by agreeing to receive this message. You know, Srila Prabhupada has a way of speaking that just doesn't leave much doubt. You know, that's pretty easy to understand, you see. In other words, if you're eager to hear it, then you can hear it. If you want to challenge it, you'll never understand it. See, Krishna's not cheap. He doesn't have to play games. Our feeling is that if you have, you know, if you have a religion and you're sold on it and you think we're barbarous and that you're civilized, all right. You know what I tell the people when, because I spend a lot of time in the southern United States, the so-called Bible Belt, you know. And sometimes people, they're telling them, you're going to go to hell, and everything's like that. So, but when people challenge, and they're looking down their nose because I'm not a Christian, then you realize that you're going to fry in hell, you barbarous thing, you. I just look at him and I say, did you pray for me? If you feel that way, please pray for me. Will you do that? And they look at him, huh? They thought I'm going to argue. Compete. They think I'm going to compete. It's like Prabhupada said to Purple here. We're not here to compete. We're not here to argue. You see? If you've got a professor that's teaching trigonometry, and you have some toothless hillbilly students, and they barely can't understand. They can't even do algebra. You know, I mean, he's not going to argue with them or compete with them. Says, well, all right, you know, you guys do whatever you want. Ooh, you know, so you know, we're not like that. We're not here to compete. We're here to present the message. You can take it or you can leave it. You know? You can take it or leave it. It's up to you. You have free will.
Our job is only to distribute.
We just deliver it. Yeah, we distribute it. We're the delivery guy. We deliver it and then help as much as we possibly can to get them to take advantage of it. You see? But if they completely reject it, we don't want to take the time to try to convince them that we're above them.
That's ego.
That's ego. That's foolishness. All right, all glories to Shri Prabhupada.
Amen.
Do you have time for a meeting?